Thus, for these past couple of weeks, you'll know that Pastor has been going over animals and their characteristics that go together with a Bible character. And I'm sorry that I'm using my phone, but I did all my notes on my computer, and then I couldn't print them out. So I literally had to write everything down on my phone. So if it looks like I'm texting, I'm really not, I swear. I'm just looking up my notes because I can't really do this without them. So anyways, Pastor's been going over animals, certain animals, and he's been kind of putting them together with the Bible character, and I can't remember what he did last week, but I remember that he said, Connor, he told me afterwards, because my dad always says aardvark. Remember whenever he asks, he always says, my dad always yells, aardvark. And everyone's like, no. So Pastor told me, he's like, if you can do an animal with aardvark, or a character in the Bible with aardvark, he's like, that'd be pretty cool. I tried to do a Bible character with aardvarks. Aardvarks are the weirdest animals you'll ever see. Here's some things about the aardvarks. Aardvarks are mammals that look like they are made from parts of other animals. An aardvark has a long snout that ends with a pig-like nose, rabbit-like ears, and a tail similar to a kangaroo, yet it is not closely related to any of these animals. Aardvarks are found in the sub-Saharan Africa. The aardvark's name comes from the Afrikaans Dutch language and means earth pig. So if you ever want to call someone a mean name, just call them an aardvark, and then you're good. They'll be like, oh, he called me an aardvark, which is actually earth pig. So that's always good to know. Although they do eat ants, so they are technically ant eaters, aardvarks are a separate species from anteaters. Aardvarks are about the size of a small pig, hence the earth pig, and they weigh up to 110 to 180 pounds. Aardvarks can be to 43 to 53 inches long, and their tail adds another 21 to 26 inches to its length. If it stuck its tongue out, an aardvark would be much longer. Their tongue can be 12 to 15 inches long, and their ears can grow to 9 to 11 inches. That is a big old animal. Aardvark live, that's not really interesting. They're kind of just weird animals, I'm telling you. Aardvarks have tough skin to protect them from their meals. Aardvarks eat about 50,000 insects each night. And aardvarks do not chew their food, they swallow their food whole, and it kind of gets ground up in their muscular stomach, which is, I thought was kind of interesting. But they can eat 50,000 insects. They rarely drink water and receive most of their moisture from the insects that they eat. It takes a female aardvark 7 months to give birth to one young at a time. Babies are called calves or cubs. Cubs weigh in at around 4 pounds when they're born. So I read everything I could about an aardvark, and I tried to mix it in with the Bible character. I just couldn't do it. So Pastor's going to be very disappointed in me. But I know that next week, whenever he says, what animal did Connor talk about, and my dad just accidentally says aardvark, that he's actually going to get one of those mints that he's been wanting. So that's good. So Dad's going to be happy. But all right, so we're going to be in Genesis 39 tonight. Going to be in Genesis 39. Oh, no. Okay. Don't think you guys are going to believe this. But I do believe that my notes deleted themselves. I'm not joking either. I'm not. Okay, I found them. Whew. I was about ready to start sweating here. All right, so we're going to start reading in Genesis 39. And Genesis 39 is about Joseph. Now, I was reading through Genesis 39. I was noticing that there are some things that we can learn from Joseph that we kind of take for granted, that we don't really realize what all Joseph went through. So right now we're just going to go through a couple of important life lessons or lessons that we can learn from Joseph. So we'll start reading in verse number 1. It says, and Joseph was brought down to Egypt. Oh, wait, I'm in the wrong one. I'm sorry. 37. That makes more sense. Chapter number 37. Okay. And it says, and Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was the son of Bilhah, and was the son of Zilpha, his wife's son. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all of his children, because he was a son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brothers saw, and when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all of his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceable unto him. Now, the first thing that I see in the story of Joseph is that jealousy can ruin a family. We see here that Israel loved Joseph so much they gave him a coat of many colors. And that could not have been cheap. That probably cost him a lot of money. And the other brothers saw that and they became jealous. Now, I am the second born son. And I'm the third born grandson. So nobody really likes me. I'm kind of just there. You know, I'm Connor. Hi. So I'm just kind of there. The other day, we were going through, not the other day, I think this was like a couple weeks ago or months ago, we were going through old family videos, and we put one in, and it was of Cody, my brother, my older brother, when he was a little baby, and he was absolutely doing nothing. He was just existing there, and they filmed him for about 4 hours. And I kept going, kept watching it. They're like, oh, look at how cute he was. And I was like, yeah, he's pretty cute. You know, it was pretty cute, and then he was even more cute, and then he got curly hair, and he was even more cuter. And they just loved this little baby. They would just play with him for hours, and they just film him. And I was like, man, that's real nice. And I was like, when's the video of me? When am I going to be in this? And they're like, oh, I think we have some. They put it in. It was like 2 minutes long. And it was like of me on the floor, and they're like, oh, there's Connor. And I was like, that's it? They're like, yeah, it was more fun having a firstborn son. And I was like, okay, that's nice. But there was always kind of that jealousy of me and my brother. I think my parents like me now. It's not that way now. I think they love me. But there was always that jealousy there because Cody was the firstborn. He was the first grandson. Everybody loved Cody. But you can see here that the jealousy within his brothers just was beginning to boil. And then it gets worse in verse number 5. And Joseph dreamed a dream. And he told his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream, which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood around about and made obeisance to my sheaves. And his brethren said unto him, shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. Now, you think that'd be good enough. You think Joseph probably learned his lesson. But in verse number 9, he dreamed another dream, and he told his brother again. He said in verse number 9, and he dreamed yet another dream, and told it his brethren, and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? So you can just kind of see where this jealousy just continued to grow inside of his brothers. And his brothers, like I said, you'd think Joseph would have learned after the first dream to not tell him the next dream, but he didn't. He just kept going, as brothers usually do. And then he just made it worse. And you can just see where that grows. So much so that his brothers, Joseph's brothers, wanted to kill him. Now, I don't think my brother ever wanted to kill me. He probably thought about it a lot. But he never did it. I'm very thankful for that. Because he probably could have. But he never did. So that's one thing that I learned from chapter number 37. And then in verse number 23 and 24... skip down there with me. In 23 it says, and it came to pass, when Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him. And they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. So the second thing that I learned from this is that Joseph's coat may have been stripped, but not his character. Interestingly, although his coat had been taken from him, he was still able to keep up his character and his integrity. He may not be wearing a beautiful coat, as a slave, but his character stood out among the other slaves in Egypt. Instead of fancy clothing and outward appearance, there is no doubt character is the best opportunity to gain respect and trust from others. So what I'm trying to get across here is that we don't need things to build us up. He had his most probably prized possession taken away from him. He had something that was given to him from his father, and none of his other brothers had that. And it was probably very important to him. He was wearing it right here. He probably wore it all the time. Whenever somebody gives something to you that you love, you take care of that thing, and it means everything to you. So that coat is just a picture of just how much his father loved him, and it was taken from him, but that didn't stop him. And then in Genesis 39, this is kind of one point here, chapter number 39, verses 1. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hands. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hands. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught what he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. So, this is kind of the same point. My point number three is, he worked hard no matter what was going on. Joseph had all the excuses not to work. He was stripped from his home. Everything he had was gone. His mom, his dad, his brothers were all gone. He had everything that he ever knew was different. He had every right, not every right, but he could have just thrown a pity party for himself and just could have not worked. But he showed character. He showed that he could do what most of us today probably wouldn't even do. So, let me read my notes here. He knew that what was going on was part of God's plan. And like I said, he could have thrown a big pity party, but instead he just shut up and, he just worked hard, and he just knew that whatever he was doing was what God wanted him to do. So he just did it, and he didn't complain about it. I think a lot of us today would have complained about it. Whenever I read through these stories, I like to put myself into these people's shoes, and I'd like to think what I would do. And whenever I read what he went through and all that he did, I think, man, I don't think I would have did any of this. I think I would have failed. I think I would have complained. I probably would have been killed, most likely. But it's just funny to see that everything that he did, I would have done opposite. And as I go through this story of Joseph, I'm like, wow, this man was truly just amazing. And I don't know. It's just something that I think about. All right, and then in verse number 7, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused and said, But he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wrought not what is with me in the house, and he committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I. Neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph, day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out. And it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand, that he fled forth. So another point that I had was that he ran from sin. Joseph ran from sin. I put here, Joseph ran from sin hard. If you're around my family at all, we say hard. For some odd reason, we put a lot of emphasis on the hard. Joseph ran from sin. He ran from the appearance of sin. A lot of times, like I said, I put myself in Joseph's shoes, and I think about all the things that I'm struggling with, and I think, wow, he had to deal with this every single day. It says, day by day, and he hearkened not unto her words. And I just think, wow, what a man this is. And I have a verse in 1 Corinthians 10:13. 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, there hath no temptation taken you, but such is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it. So that right there says that God's going to be with you through all these temptations. That whatever you're going through, everyone else has gone through it, and that you can get it through this. And I think a lot about what Pastor says. Pastor says that whenever you're trying to get over a temptation, whenever you're trying to get over a sin, you can't do it by yourself. You can try and try and try to do it by yourself. You can tell God, I'll get over this. I'll get this. Don't worry, I'll figure this out. And you'll probably just make it worse. If you try to take it into your own hands, you're just going to make it worse. And Pastor always says that if you just, the day that you come and you're like, God, I can't do this anymore. God, I need you to take this from me. More times than not, God's going to take it from you. And that's just giving it over to God. That's what you need to do. And that's what Joseph did here. Okay, going back here. Probably should have had a bookmark. So, in Genesis 45 then, go over to Genesis 45, please. Okay. In Genesis 45, verse 1, it says, then Joseph could not refrain himself from before all that stood by him. And he cried, causing every man to go out from him. And there stood no man with him, while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. And Joseph said unto his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near, and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into slavery. So the next point that I have is that he chose forgiveness over revenge. And I put here that forgiveness is never the wrong choice. God is never going to condemn you for forgiving someone. It may be hard to forgive someone, but the only one that it is hurting is yourself. Pastor says that a lot, that whenever you're upset or you're angry at someone, the only one that you're hurting is yourself. A lot of the times, the other person that you're mad at doesn't even know that you're mad at them. The only person that you're hurting is yourself. And what Joseph's brothers did to him was something that, you know, most of us today would have been so upset with. We would never talk to them. We would never look at them. But Joseph here was so excited. Now, I skipped over all the parts where the story of his brothers coming and the famine and the most of the story here. But this part stuck out to me more, the forgiveness of Joseph. I think how petty we are if someone looks at us the wrong way, that we'll not talk to them, or we'll say something behind their back, we'll start gossiping, or just something. And Joseph went all these years, to see his brethren, and he just couldn't refrain himself. It says, then Joseph could not refrain himself anymore, because he's basically playing with them. And it just stood out to me that if we had this kind of forgiveness that Joseph had, how better we would all be. If we could just forgive people, then this world would be a better place. I know a lot of what's going around in the world is just people not being able to forgive. All the Black Lives Matter and all that stuff. It's just forgive, you know. But anyways, the harsh reality of life can sometimes knock us down, but the life of Joseph demonstrates God's ability to transform a bad situation into a good one. God is in control no matter what, and that's something that I lose track of in my life. Whenever things aren't going right and things aren't going my way, I always get frustrated and I try to control it myself, and whenever I do that, things just, they don't go the way that they're supposed to, and you can just tell. And whenever you get back into God's Word and you get back into what God wants you to do and you start going His way, it's just funny how everything just comes in and fits perfectly in. And that's what happens in Joseph's life. I'm sure that whenever he was down in the pit, whenever he was down in the dungeon for doing something that he didn't do, he probably thought, man, what am I doing? He probably thought, why is my life like this? Why am I here? What did I do wrong? But in the end, he was made the Pharaoh's. He did all this stuff for Israel. He saved up. He pretty much saved Israel and Egypt. And it was just amazing how God took a story that seemed like it had no good turns and made it into something so amazing. So that's pretty much it. I went through my notes amazingly fast. So if anyone has anything to add, I mean, I wasn't expecting a whole lot of people, but it's just, I probably could have added a lot more things. The patience of Joseph is something too. Like what I said, whenever he was down in the pit, he just had all this patience to wait for God. If we can learn to wait for God, then things are going to be right. And that's something that a lot of us can't do. We can't wait for God to do what He wants to do. And a lot of times, God takes His time in doing things, and we're just such a people that just wants to get things done. And we want to do things our own way, that we just mess up God's plan. So if we just learn to be patient and to just wait for God, we can probably do a lot more. But, all right, well, that's all that I have for you. I'm sorry that was so fast. But hopefully you got something from this message tonight. I don't know if you did, but maybe God used something that I said. But, all right, well, let's pray tonight. Dear Lord.